It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. Wes Moss here on a Sunday morning. Ryan Ely to take your calls and questions. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So many things happening in the world, and we've got this scenario. And again, we will go to the phones. The theme here, trying to give you some context around where we finished the first half of the year and then where we're headed in the second half. And why we see this disconnect between the economy and the stock market. The economy doing well, stock market kind of lumbering along, not really making a whole lot of new ground. The S&P this week did kind of perk up and now is up a little over 4%. The Dow just turned positive this week after this big correction we had at the beginning of the year. So a lot happening, and there's been this, you know, all this talk, and I'm part of this. I'm a big believer that this economy is doing extraordinarily well, but the stock market is just doing, quote, okay, and there's this disconnect between the two. I also want to get to this development that we've hinted towards for the last really almost 2 years now, and now it's coming to fruition, is the thought that NATO countries are underspending on defense. They're supposed to be spending 2% of GDP. They were called out about that fact of their underspending at the NATO meeting this week by Donald Trump. And that could be a game changer for the industry, not just in the United States, but around the globe. And I want to get to those numbers here because it's kind of some fascinating statistics around what militaries around the world, how undercapitalized they are, and how little some countries are actually spending. So we're gonna get to that. And then, of course, I want to go to the phones and continue to answer your questions, that whether they have to do with a pension versus a lump sum, an investment strategy that's working. We had a great call earlier that a classic case of little account doing well, big account, little account good, big account bad. Little account good, big account bad. Shouldn't I do more of the little account? Well, there's a lot to that. Maybe you're thinking about buying an annuity, life insurance. Maybe it's a real estate question, rental property. Maybe you're worried about an inverted yield curve and are we gonna topple over as an economy. What should I be watching out for? How do I protect myself? How do I generate more income from my investments, dividends from publicly traded stocks, equities, interest from various bond categories, distributions from things like publicly traded REITs or pipeline companies that all add up to a portfolio yield, which in my book makes a lot of sense. There's predictability there. There is stability in that piece of the equation because we're all after the same thing, total return. Total return's pretty simple. It's growth plus income. We can find growth over time, but it's certainly less predictable. Income, on the other hand, is highly predictable, and you can structure your investments or your portfolio to generate a steady stream of dividends and interest and distributions. That's called a yield or cash flow. And if nothing else, you can have a high sense of reliance and predictability on that piece of the equation, which, oh, by the way, happens to be almost half of the total return equation. I think that makes a lot of sense. There's a million ways to do it. There are literally infinite ways to invest. And there's a lot of merit to many, many of these ways. I happen to subscribe to, and we have for years on Money Matters, to an income philosophy or an income approach. And it's obviously a big theme of the show. But we also love to take your phone calls and questions. We strive to be the most objective financial advice live show in the nation. And we'll continue to do that for as long as as long as humanly possible. So the number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Now, where are we going here? Ryan says you have to go to the phones here. I want to go back to the economy, but we've got to go to the phone first. And then we'll get right to the economy and defense after we talk to Cindy, who joins us from Atlanta. Cindy, what's going on? How can I help?
Hey, good morning. Hey, I did a kitchen renovation last year, and I ended up using an equity line of credit. So now I regret having about
Did you like your kitchen renovation? That's first.
I do, but now it's like I didn't have any debt before, and so now I have debt. So it's bugging me, and I can't pay it off in like immediately or anything. So it's gonna be a while before I get it. Of course, before I get it all paid off. So I have an old employer's 401k that I have not rolled over yet. I could tap that. It's about the same amount as the equity line of credit line. So I
Cindy,
could use
how
that
let me ask you this, Cindy? How old are you? What is your age?
59.
Did you leave that company post age 55 in the 401k?
Yeah, I've already been told I could use it. I won't have to pay the penalty. I'll have to pay taxes, but not the penalty.
Right, so, Cindy, by the way, I think it's an important reminder to folks that we always talk about the 59 and a half age that you can tap your IRA. But remember, and this is, I'm glad you're bringing this up, for those of you listening, it doesn't get talked about as much. If you leave an employer at the age of 55 or older, you are allowed to tap your 401k essentially early, meaning at 55 and not have to wait to 59 and a half without having to pay the penalty. The taxes are the real issue, though. So, Cindy, I guess my question here, and this is the biggest problem with doing this, and I'd love for you to pay off this HELOC, this home equity line of credit, how much will the $35,000 impact your taxes is the question.
I don't know. I guess, I'm still working.
About how much are you married filing jointly, you and your husband?
Single.
You're single. And approximate earnings in this year, I'm going to 50s. Yeah, so I'm just trying to think what this will do to your tax bracket here.
I don't have a lot of write-offs anymore.
If you were to jump, let me just see here. So 2018 tax brackets. I'm trying to think of what this will do to, you're single, you're making, you will stay, if you're making about 50. So here are the tax, remember we have a new tax bracket. And I've just Googled, 2018 tax brackets, Forbes comes up right out of the gate. You've got the 12% bracket, the 22, the 24, and so forth. These are the new 2018 brackets. So for individuals, Cindy, there's the category with the new category for this year, 22% category is $38,701 up to $82,500. And in this case, it sounds like if you pull out 35 grand and you're making 50, you still kind of stay in that same 22% tax bracket. Now, your overall effective rate will go up because you're going to have more of your income taxed at that 22%. So it's going to hurt your tax bracket or your overall effective rate. It's not just about the brackets. Remember, it's about how much of each category gets taxed at that new higher level. And this would be all at the new higher level. But what is the interest rate on the HELOC? How bad are we talking?
It's
and how much is the payment every month?
It's about, the payment's not bad at all, but it's about 4-5% now for the equity line of credit.
And how much is the payment every month?
Probably 130. The minimum. I've been paying more than that, but it's not a lot.
Yeah. But is it
but
so
I don't want $35,000 to turn into $70,000 either.
So the HELOC, having this debt is just bugging you. You have no other mortgage. It's just the HELOC on the house.
Yes.
And how much do you think you're going to be? Is this kind of like a next 10-year house, 20-year house, or would you ever be moving in the next, let's call it, couple of years?
Well, I've been there a long time, so I wish I knew. I really don't know, to be honest.
You have no plans of moving, is what you're saying.
Well, I've been there, not right this minute. I don't know when I'm going to move.
Yeah, you could do it a couple different ways. I think that if it's bugging you, happy retirees have no mortgage, right? And how many more years do you plan on working, by the way?
Probably at least three.
Okay. So my thought here is that you want to have the debt paid off by the time you stop working and you effectively are kind of easing into retirement. That's my goal for you. It doesn't have to be today. To your point, though, it's bugging you, and this is exactly why it's so so important to get rid of the debt before you retire and to do these kitchen renovations and fix the roof and fix the air conditioner and buy a new car and do all this before you retire. So you're doing it while you have income. My thought here, though, is that it's such a low interest rate. It will, you're talking about 4 to 5%. The $35,000 is going to put a big chunk into that new 22 bracket versus the 12, which is the first up to your $38,700. And it's going to cost you, let's call it an extra 10% on $35,000. You're talking about $3,500 is the tax bill, let's say, on average. And again, this is just doing some back of the napkin math. So my thought for you would be to do it a little, not do it all in one chunk. If it were me and you're bothered by this HELOC, do it over the course of 2 years instead of one. So take out 15 to 17 this year, pay it down, and then over the course of next year, do the rest. That way it'll spread
and
it out.
Actually, that's what I can do when I just turned 59. So when I'm 59 and a half, I've got my big 401k. So I guess that's the smarter way to do it, because with this other 401k, you have to take all or nothing. You can't just take half of it.
Oh, you can't.
They're going to make you take the...
Okay, huh? They're going to make you take the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah.
But now that you're 59 and a half, you can roll it over an IRA, and then you can just take pieces of it if you want, or really combine the two. So I think that's the answer. Be careful about adding too much income all at once, because obviously your overall effective rate will go up, even though it might not take you above the 22 bracket. You're still going to pay more at that higher rate. So spread it out over, instead of 1 year, spread it out.
59 and a half.
Okay, I love that. And I've got to run to news weather traffic, but Cindy, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, have a great Sunday. Let's see, we've got a lot to talk about still. We're going to run to news weather traffic, then the global defense industry right here on Money Matters. So stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Welcome back to Money Matters here, WSB Radio. So many things to get to. And we've been talking about this disconnect between the stock market and the economy. Let's kind of get to where you've got a couple of reasons why this has been happening. We've already talked about the fact that there's $800 billion worth of, let's call it, stimulus on the U.S. economy. It's not versus the worst case scenario for tariffs would be about $120 billion in cost. So that's a big number. So if you look at from our numbers, the worst case scenario is about $120 billion in tariff cost. The $120 billion divided by $20 trillion economy, call that 0.6% of gross domestic product. So it's a big deal, but it's also not a complete deal killer. We've been saying here on Money Matters for months and months and months that's how we need to put this into perspective. Is that there's an $800 billion foot on the economic accelerator, and worst case scenario, $120 billion foot on the brakes, if you will. So the car still moves forward, and the positive pressure on this economy, the $800 billion of stimulus, that outweighs the negative 7-1. This week looked like the market kind of started to wake up to that fact, but we'll see. I doubt the headline risk and the choppiness is gone though from here. There's going to be more indigestion from tariff talk, and the pressure will likely build until the midterm elections, which brings me to the midterm elections. The midterm election, if you really can, actually historically adds a great deal of uncertainty to markets. Historically, the stock market struggles big time during the first three quarters of the midterm years, and with an average decline of about 6% before heading higher following the election. And we're going to talk about that, obviously, in a minute. I'm going to give you some statistics. So stay tuned. We've got news, weather, traffic straight ahead. Then more Money Matters when we talk about these midterm elections and kind of the wet blanket that throws on the economy, or not the economy, but throws on the stock market itself. And then getting back to this calling out of NATO countries not spending enough on military and defense. All of that straight ahead right here on Money Matters, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here at WSB Radio on a Sunday morning. We take your calls and your questions. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. But we got to get back to midterm elections here and what that means for this market. Again, this prevailing theme of good market, not a great market, great economy. Why is there this disconnect? Well, one, tariff talk. And the worry that tariffs cost this economy $100 billion plus, which it's still not there yet, but that could be the case. So obviously, that's a foot on the brake pedal versus the accelerator. But the midterm elections are also something that doesn't get a whole lot of press as far as what it, in the impact on the market. So the less talked about factor that's influencing markets right now. Historically, the market struggles, the stock market struggles during the first three quarters of midterm years. And that's exactly where we are right now, right? We're just starting the third quarter with an average decline of 6% before kind of starting to surge following the election. Of course, you know, the question is why? Well, the most logical explanation is that investors fear the possibility of some sort of massive political shift or change. And uncertainty obviously is never good for markets. What's the White House look like post midterms, or what is the House look like post midterms? What's the Senate look like post midterms? Once the election passes, and historically it doesn't matter what the outcome is, regardless of the outcome, markets tend to perform well. And that's obviously the removal of uncertainty. Always a positive for markets, or almost always a positive for markets. Statistics going back to 1950, the S&P 500 has not declined one time in the 12 months following a midterm election with an average gain of over 15%. Pretty remarkable statistic. I'll say it again. Going back to 1950, the S&P 500 has not declined one time in the 12 months following a midterm election with an average gain of over 15%. Now, of course, that's history and it doesn't always repeat itself, but it really shows us in markets how big of a wet blanket midterms can be. And then once you effectively remove that wet blanket, how well markets can really do. Now, as far as the economy is concerned, U.S. economy, again, a workhorse, no other word, no better descriptor than that. We are 108 months deep into an economic expansion. That's a long time. That's the second longest expansion on record in the United States. And that could become the longest expansion by next summer. Now, despite the length of this expansion, almost all the data I use to judge the economy, that's in healthy territory. Now, we've got to worry about this inverted yield curve. Yes, that's a worry. We've got to worry about wage growth as the black widow of economic numbers. We've got to worry about the 10-year treasury going too high too soon. So there are obviously other variables that are getting to the point where they could start turning negative, but they haven't yet. Jobs year to date, we know the U.S. added 1.3 million jobs. That's if you average that out, it's about 115,000 jobs per month. That compares to 182,000 per month in 2017 and 192,000 per month since the financial crisis ended. So we've actually accelerated. This job market has accelerated in the past year. Consumer confidence, if you look at different confidence measures, so the Consumer Confidence Index, CCI, you look at the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, the MCSI, both sit at 10-year highs. And we just mentioned wage growth continues to improve, but not too dramatically, which is key. All of this is leading to stronger corporate profits, which grew, by the way. First quarter earnings finished up 23%. Second quarter expected, as we're in earnings season now, expected to continue that same trajectory, an estimated growth rate of 21% for earnings. As far as gross domestic product, first quarter GDP, clocked in at about 2.8%. That's the highest level since mid-2015. And if you look at quarter two, we're looking at estimates anywhere between 3.5% and 4%. The Atlanta Fed GDP Now forecast I like to look at hovering just below 4%. Now, let's get to kind of my favorite topic of the day, and that has to do with NATO. And I call this the 2% of GDP step up. And we'll talk about what just happened at the most recent NATO meeting. According to Article 5 of the NATO treaty, members of NATO are expected to spend 2% of the their total GDP on defense spending. 2%. Not too tall of an order. Seeing how we spend over 3.5% of our massive gross domestic product on defense. Only 6 of the current members actually hit that target. The U.S., of course, and we far exceed that, by the way. And then Greece and Estonia and Romania and Poland and the U.K. So the only real impactful spending is coming from the U.S. and the U.K. So 2% of GDP of Greece, not moving the meter all that much. Spain, Belgium, Luxembourg, under 1% of their GDP. France, under the 2% target. Norway, Canada, Italy, the Netherlands, all under the target. Croatia, Portugal, Bulgaria, all well under the 2% mark. Germany, by the way, which is a massive economy, misses the mark by almost 40%. They clock in at about 1.25% of their GDP. They're supposed to be at 2%. That means they're about 40% shy of the target. And of course, it's not just Trump about this. We've been talking about this for months now here, or actually the last couple of years, but Trump finally kind of brought this up at a NATO summit. So Trump takes issue with this. He wants two major changes on this. He wants everybody or all member countries to immediately step up to 2%. So everyone all to 2% now. So that's every NATO country has to step, or what he's calling for them to step up to this 2% of GDP spending mark right away, instead of what had been agreed upon is everyone working towards that target in 2024. And then he wants everyone to push to 4%. So he also wants the target of GDP to double from 2 to 4%. Consider this. Let's talk about, for example, the state of Germany's military. Of Germany's 128 Typhoon fighter jets, only 4 of them are combat ready. Out of Germany's 6 submarines, 0 of those submarines are at sea. Of the 244 combat tanks that are in Germany, how many are operational? Only 95. Remember, Germany is the 4th largest economy in the world, and they effectively have a military that is kind of sitting there collecting rust. 4 of their combat jets working out of 128. So as we've talked about these defense stocks over the last couple of years, this lack of required spending on defense has been one of the most interesting economic disconnects, maybe better to say political disconnect, but certainly an economic disconnect that I've cited for a long time now. And that might be changing as of this NATO summit as the catalyst. As a whole, NATO countries spend about $1 trillion on defense per year. So as a group, NATO spends about $1 trillion on defense per year. About $700 billion of that, of course, comes from the United States. But if everybody in NATO stepped up to the 2% of their respective GDP levels, defense spending would rise by about $110 billion. It's a big number. If the target were to go to 4%, NATO defense spending would go up by about 50%. 50% of $1 trillion is a massive, massive number. The reason, by the way, it doesn't double, you think, oh, well, it goes from 2 to 4%. Why doesn't it go by 100%? It goes up 50%. The reason it doesn't double, as you might think, is that the U.S. is already close to that 4% mark of GDP, and we have the biggest contribution by far. So we're at about 3.5% of our GDP already, and that's why it doesn't double. But still, 50% jump of $1 trillion in spending is a massive, massive number. Now, there are, of course, extraordinary pushback to this, as you can expect. Tons of articles about how Germany says that how they spend their money gives a greater focus to NATO and that the 2% mark isn't really the right measure. Canada says the same thing. So there's going to be this great debate from these NATO countries right out of the gate on this. But the prevailing direction of what is going to get spent on military and defense, from where I sit, it looks like to me it's going to be higher. Higher defense spending around the globe. What did the aerospace and defense industry look like, by the way, this week after on this news, if you will? Well, remember, let's take a look at what the market did as a whole this week. S&P 500 was up 1.5% on the week. Northrop Grumman up 4.6%. Boeing up 4.8%. Lockheed Martin this week up 6.4%. If you look at the group as a whole, and I track this by looking at ITA, there's an ETF symbol ITA. It's the aerospace and defense ETF. As a whole, the group up 3.3%. I've been expecting Trump's call to live up to Article 5 for a long time now. The step up to spend at least 2% of GDP on military and defense. What I did not expect was the call for that number to double to 4%. Now, I think that the 4% is probably a stretch for most of these countries to even get close to, but the prevailing trend here for spending in this already massive sector seems to be headed higher. And to me, that sounds like a global growth story for the industry as a whole. Ryan Ealy, we've got a prize back, my friends. Nope, I can't hear you.
Well, can you hear
there
me?
We do
have a prize pack.
Yep.
It is a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Stripers at Cooley Field. Go visit gostripers.com for tickets and game schedule.
Say that again. I need to hear that one more time.
A family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Stripers at Cooley Field. Visit gostripers.com for tickets and game schedule. Caller number 3, prize pack's yours.
Got it. And the number here, the prize line, 404-741-0750. Again, 404-741-0750. I guess the third caller. Ryan Ealy, thank you, my friend. All right, well, we're going to go quick news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. A little programming note coming up here at... let's just get you... We've got a debate coming up here. And I want to make sure that you remember this. Republican candidate debate for governor right here on WSB Radio, 12:30 to 1:30. Casey Cagle, Brian Kemp, square off. See it on Channel 2 Action News, WSB Television, of course, 12:30 to 1:30. But also right here, News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. So it looks as though, at least for this past week, the market is starting to wake up to the fact that there's more economic stimulus than there is foot on the brake pedal when it comes to the tariff talk. So tariffs have obviously a very unnerving economic development. If you read the headlines, you'll believe that all trade is going to stop between the United States and China. That's obviously not going to happen. That's not the case. But the tariffs do have a real negative economic impact. A tariff is effectively a tax. Makes everything more expensive. It slows down commerce. It creates inflation. It's just a tax. So we don't want tariffs. We know that. I think the administration knows that. But they're also using this period of time as a negotiation, just like we've come to learn very quickly. That's what the White House does. That's what Trump and his team does. It's the same thing with NATO. This is classic Trump saying, not only do I want you to go to 2% of spending of GDP, like you should have been doing, not only do I want you to do that, I want you to double your spending on GDP to 4%. I mean, where else does that come from? That is textbook Trump negotiation. That's exactly what we've seen him do time and time again. Do we really expect GDP to jump to 4% of spending for all these NATO countries who can't even... get to 1% for so many of them, let alone 2? Are they really going to go to 4? Probably not. But is the direction higher? I think it is. And I think we're going to see anywhere from $100 billion of new spending on defense and military around the globe, all the way to the potential for a half a trillion dollars of new spending. I think that's a stretch. That's obviously, if everybody jumped to 4% of spending, I don't think it's going to happen. But the same thing is happening with tariffs. This tough talk and action by the government is putting us in a position that at some point will be beneficial for the United States economy as we get back on a more level playing field when it comes to our trade partners around the world. We will continue to keep you up to date on all of the developments that have to do with trade, what that's going to do to the economy, and then, of course, all the economic indicators that we need to look at that could spell recession. Still not on the horizon just yet, but we are always on recession watch as we are in the second longest expansion in economic history in the United States. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so, wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. There's a contact button. It comes straight to me and the Money Matters team. If you want to get together, we're right here in Atlanta and have offices in several different states. If you'd like to find our second quarter update, go to yourwealth.com, Y-O-U-R, wealth.com, to see the economic or second quarter mid-year update right on the homepage. Otherwise, have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Stay tuned to WSB Radio for the best programming on the planet. Right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.